dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey, Driven Woman, welcome back. And, you know, I'm really excited to share this client success story episode with you. The client success stories are always the most popular of all my podcast episodes because, hey, who doesn't like a good makeover? This one is featuring one of my favorite clients, Emily Rapp Black. She is a real badass. This lady is a college professor of creative writing, a New York Times best-selling author with 4 published memoirs, including a brand new one I just bought called Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg. I'll link to it in the show notes. Emily's also a mother and an entrepreneur with 2 businesses, a Peloton enthusiast, wickedly funny, and has never let either her ADHD or her prosthetic leg slow her down. Yeah, you heard me. Now, when it comes to business, Emily needed a little help because she had challenges related to boundaries, setting limits, and charging enough for the tremendous value she brings to her collaborative writing clients. Emily knew long before she hired me that she was saying yes to too many different kinds of projects and kind of knew that it was limiting her income. But what she didn't realize is that it was really eating up all her time and her most important dreams and goals, like taking a month off every summer to work on her own writing, just weren't going to happen without some serious mindset work and business restructuring. So in this episode, we will talk about some of the things we accomplished through our coaching, like identifying your non-negotiables and communicating them with confidence, how your personal values of sensitivity, empathy, and generosity make you a lovely person, but they create real challenges in business. And when you grow your business by embracing intentional constraints in who you work with, your scope of work, and what you charge, you create more freedom than you can ever imagine. Before we get into this juicy interview, this week's podcast praise for the Driven Woman comes from Trisha Dempsey. Now, let me just tell you, this is a near perfect podcast review. So listen up. Trisha says, "Diane is my new business BFF. Her perspective on the driven entrepreneur is a breath of fresh air. She is a role model for us all because she's both vulnerable and bold, speaking what we're all thinking and at the same time holding space for those still in the messy middle of reaching their goals. Thank you, Diane, for being a great example of what's possible for us all." Hello, Trisha Dempsey. My goodness, what a wonderful review. And I'm truly humbled and incredibly grateful. But please, if you're wanting to leave a review, just go to the show notes, click on the appropriate link for Apple or Android. You do not have to be as eloquent and articulate as Trisha. You can even spell my name wrong and have crappy grammar. I will still love it, love you, and share it on a future episode, I promise. So, without any further delay, I'm really excited to share my client, my friend, and this very exciting interview with Emily Rapp Black. Buckle up and enjoy. So these client success story episodes are among the most popular and my personal favorites because I get to reconnect with some of my favorite people on the planet. When I was working with Emily last year, I said, "I will have to send someone to hurt you if you tell anyone this, but I think you are literally one of my favorite clients ever." And now everybody knows. So good to see you again, Emily.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. You know, we first connected when I did a webinar for the Covey Club, and I heard from you almost instantly after that. And when I first saw your credentials in the questionnaire, I'm like, I wonder what she needs help with, because you are a college professor. You are a many times over published author and a best-selling author, and you have a couple of businesses. I'm like, what can I help this lady with? But as I got to know you and we started unpacking the struggles of a creative entrepreneur with ADHD, there's certain things that kind of come to light. And we got to do a lot of really cool things in restructuring not only your business, but the way you offer your work to the world and the way you communicate that more clearly. So I'm really excited to unpack some of that. Okay. Do you remember specifically around the issue of boundaries and identifying that you were really doing too much for too many and had been doing that for too long and weren't getting enough in return?
Yes, I think for me, I mean, and you pointed this out. You said you really like a good story. You feel like stories are important and transformative, which is true. So I was taking people on that, you know, they did have good stories, but they didn't necessarily have the resources to go the full distance, or they kind of anticipated a cadence of communication that was unreasonable for me.
Meaning they were needy.
Yeah. Like, I mean, please don't send me 50 texts a day. And I am the kind of person who would try to respond to everything immediately. And then I was like, why am I doing this? Like, so I think a lot of that was just sort of unpacking my own training as a person growing up in a service-oriented family. And, you know, someone has a need, you go meet it. Someone has a problem, you help them. And it's also part of being a mom. Like, your kid is crying, you don't just say, can you just wait for 15 seconds? Like, you go help. So I think kind of making that separation between my personal sort of relationship style and interface with clients. And of course, some of them become friends and there's that. But just in the business part of it, I had to be firm about things like pricing, just because then I was annoyed when I was doing something and it was really hard and it felt like I was making like a penny on the hour or something if you just stretched it out. So that wasn't good.
Well, as a ghostwriter in particular, I mean, you help people bring their words into the world in a powerful way. And I mean, I don't know what the statistics are currently, Emily, but the number of people who say that writing a book is on their bucket list is like, what is it? Like upwards of 80% of people say they, literally it's everybody wants to write a book. And there are a lot of people who say everyone has a book in them. And I say, I'm kind of blunt, you know, like I think maybe everyone has a book in them, but maybe some of those books aren't going to be consumed by anyone else. But the people that hire you have to first convince you that they have a story that needs to be heard. And you have to be convinced that you are the person to help them tell that story. Right. But it's a very involved, pretty intimate and collaborative process. So it was very easy for me to understand, even without being an author, how boundaries and expectations and clear communication and just being a naturally empathic and helpful person can create this perfect storm situation where you are just spread way the hell out and have trouble pushing back. And I'm glad you mentioned that your upbringing as well, because you were raised in the kind of family where, like, if you have the ability to help, that's what you do. And you do not consider, do I have the time? Do I have the bandwidth? Do I have the resources? You just go. And also, you're a super energetic person who has a lot of capacity. Let's be honest. I mean, you like to be busy. You like to be occupied. You like doing a lot of things and operating at a high level. But I think your empathy and your desire to be inclusive definitely got in the way, especially for, I think, the people that really wanted to write, but at some point you realized you actually wanted it for them more than they wanted it for themselves, and you were pulling them along.
Yes. I also think, to your point, I think everyone does have a book in them. I just don't think that they maybe not be the person to write it. Like, maybe they need someone else to write their story. Like, because people often say, oh, this crazy thing happened to me, or this thing happened to me, and everyone tells me I should write a book. And it's like, okay, but writing a book is a literary endeavor, unless it's a self-help book, which is a whole other story, or if it's a hybrid book. But it requires a great deal of skill. And so people just think, oh, you know, I had this great life. Here's the chronological story. isn't that enough? And it's like, no, you don't get credit for just living it. You have to just tell it well. And that's a whole other kind of process of coming to terms with it. And people often resist it. They're like, no, that's not what happened. I can't remember. You know, why is that important? You know, and I'm saying, well, this is the process. Like, you, if your reader doesn't have these things, they will put your book down. And then everything that you've done that's really cool will never be known in this way that it could be if you would just listen to me.
And honestly, the type of books that you help people write, mm-hmm. and the type of books that you write and have written and have become known for and respected mm-hmm. for are memoir. Mm-hmm. And that type of writing mm-hmm. is very intimate, yes. very personal. And you are literally like the midwife that's helping birth that book into the world. So the doula, you are the book doula. So to be able to let people know they need to let this part go, or you need yeah. to highlight, or they need to go deeper. I mean, you probably have to go as deep as any therapist mm-hmm. with people's psyche mm-hmm. and their attachment to yeah. specific things about their work, which makes it really mm-hmm. difficult to set those limits and enforce them. Do you remember a specific situation that we talked about where I was asking you to make some decisions about how to package your work mm-hmm. so that, because I remember, I mean, we laughed about this, that you were literally all over the place. You had people at all these different price points yeah. doing yeah. all these different yeah. kinds of projects. And while I respect that you got a fuck ton of bandwidth and desire and passion for the work,
yeah.
you were literally yeah. like, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, this is not sustainable. Especially when you told me that you wanted to be able to take a month off during yeah. the summer. I'm like, oh, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that, because I think that was such an important part of our work together that really made a difference in your business and I think your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really like having the packages that are sort of out there for people to look at. And when I'm on a call with someone now, I'll just very bluntly state like how much it's going to cost and not worry about what the reaction is. because I'm just, and then I'll say, you know, it's an investment and it's worth it. And I don't think those words have ever uttered forth from my mouth. Or I'll say things like, I'm really good at what I do. And I feel you're like my mom going, don't brag. And then you saying like, yeah, like it's this kind of combo, because I am really good at what I do. And I am sort of, I think one thing I've realized having done this now since, I don't know, almost 10 years, I suppose, maybe 6 or 7. I can't remember. Anyway, is that I'm a kind of uniquely positioned as a person to do this kind of collaborative work. Like a lot of writers don't play so well with others when it comes to creativity. And I really like it. I like collaboration.
Mm-hmm. It's synergistic for you.
Yeah. And like my agent's always like, yeah, you seem to be really great at this. And I'm telling you, she's like, a lot of the people that a lot of writers don't even want to do it. Which is lost opportunity, because you lose, I don't know, it's just a really great thing to meet someone who has a really interesting story and is a hard worker. And that's also something I had to sort of understand, that I can't work with people who don't work really hard. And also yes. I can't work with people who just expect me to be sort of like an employee that helps them get exactly what they want. That's not how the business works. So just being clear about that with people, like what I can do and what I cannot do, has really helped. And it's definitely eased up some of the stress. I mean, there's always going to be stress in a business, but it's definitely eased up that part.
Well, I remember you, and I think this is part of being a gifted creative woman with ADHD traits, is that you have a lot of capacity. You have a lot of desire. You have a lot of energy. You have a lot of passion. Mm-hmm. And we are such good problem solvers mm-hmm. that even if somebody shows us a half-baked thing, we're like, I think I can work with that.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. Right? I like that mess. It's like,
right. It's there's yeah. something about, I can bring order to this chaos. Mm-hmm. I can find the diamond in the rough. I can make, I think my daughter calls it painting the pig, you know, like mm-hmm. I can make this thing. And that's a creative process for us. Mm-hmm. But I think for you as a creative, it was delightful. Because you're like, I can work with this. I can make this work. And it was exciting and fun for you. Yeah. But as a business owner and someone who's trying to be a professor, a collaborative writer, a mom, an athlete, a friend, you know, like all the things that you are, there wasn't enough room for all the situations that you could make work. And I remember a turning point in our coaching where it was like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Yeah. And I know how much we hate limiting ourselves or making choices because we want to say yes to everything. Mm. It's like, you can't say yes to everything and do your best work. You cannot say yes to everything that you could do. Let's identify the things you must do and then remove everything else. And I'm super excited to hear that you are now telling people, this is how I work. Mm-hmm. This is what it costs.
Yeah.
It's not really negotiable. Like, these are the ways that you can work with me. If I'm the right person to work with you, these are your opportunities. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of funny because I think that part didn't seem like it was so difficult for you to say, these are the different ways that I'm willing to work with people.
Yeah.
I can take this amount of people for this program, this amount of people for this program. And it gave you the opportunity to do your retreats, to take that month off, to do your own freaking writing and so forth. Have you found any like challenges with this as you've implemented it and moved forward, places where it didn't work?
I think sometimes someone will have, will want one of these programs and it's actually slightly different. They want something slightly different. So then the challenge becomes like, do you change the program slightly? Do you not change the program slightly? I mean, what I like about working with someone else in my partnership is that she and I kind of talk it through together so that we're not sort of, sometimes when I'm making those decisions on my own, I feel a little bit like unmoored or like maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. And my business partner is like, she's such a straight talker, like city girl from Chicago. And she's just like, no, we don't do that. Like we were once in a call and she said, she's like, the thing is, we don't work for free. Because the person had like sort of gotten us on the call with the expectation that they had these resources. And it turns out, no, they wanted to convince us that this was such a good story that it would become a national bestseller. And like we would get like royalties. And we were like, that's not going to happen. And we don't work for free. But I mean, the look on her face was, I mean, I almost started laughing, but it was just, it's just that kind of thing. Like people really, really want to write a book and then you give them a price and they're like, oh.
Oh,
but you would never say to a lawyer, oh, okay, you're $300 an hour. I'm going to pay you 25. Or, hey, you're a doctor. I'm not going to pay you to do my heart surgery. And I'm not making a one-to-one comparison between writing a book and doing heart surgery, but it's still a profession. Like I'm trained to do this. This is what I do. And actually I had one of my new clients is one of my favorites. She's favorites. She was, even though you're not supposed to have them, she's in two of my classes.
Well, we've already covered that.
And she was like, I said, okay, so now I'm going to be a little prescriptive. And she's like, here she goes. And I was like, this is your prologue. You move this sentence here. The paragraph over here goes here. You flip this. And the person was like, oh my God, that totally makes sense. And I'm like, yes, yes, it does. And I've also had mostly male clients who will come back and say, yeah, I was really resistant to your feedback. I thought you were totally wrong. And then I did it and you were right. And I was like, yep. I'm glad we're there now. We've covered that. So I think that's also something that people don't, there's an art to it, you know, and it's unique to everyone, but it's definitely not something that everyone can do. I mean, I learned how to do it. People taught me how to do it. I didn't just like, you know, come out of the womb being like, I'm a writer. You know, I mean, it's just, that's not what happens. You decide to do it. You train to do it. You learn to do it.
It's an art, it's a science, it's a craft, and it is a profession. And I think women, particularly gifted, creative, sensitive, women with ADHD, we've got this whole rejection sensitivity thing going on.
Yes.
And also, let's face it, Emily, we talked about this a lot. Our feminine conditioning, especially if you've been raised in a conservative family or a church-going family, our feminine conditioning is, you should be nice. You should be helpful. You should not put yourself first. You should not think too highly of yourself.
Yeah, don't brag.
It's not flattering if you are boastful or, I mean, I'm thinking like the seven deadly sins and the Ten Commandments and all that. But for a woman to be successful as an entrepreneur, she does need to say, this is what I do. It's not really negotiable, unless of course it is. And this is what it's worth. And if you are the right client to work with me, this is what it's going to look like. And to see how you developed in your ability to step away from this very well-developed habit of saying, I can work with that. Mm-hmm. I can work with that because you're a natural problem solver.
Mm-hmm. Right? Being a writer is like, oh, here's a...
Exactly. Yeah, and it's like, I could work with that. But then to hold the space for yourself to say, if I am going to raise my daughter the way I want to, I'm going to live the lifestyle that I want to have, I need to carve out large blocks of time to do my own writing and not give every moment of my time away to help other people do theirs. Mm-hmm. You had to make some strong boundaries. Now, mm-hmm. when people start pushing back against those boundaries, mm-hmm. like, do you find that as you're more clear and are able to say, this is what I do, this is what I don't do, and maybe you're not a fit, and this is what it costs, and kind of take it or leave it? Do you find that you get more pushback than you used to when you were more accommodating or less? How has it affected you in the last few months?
It's definitely, I get the most pushback from men, no matter what.
And that hasn't changed.
No, maybe it never will. I think it's sort of the theory there. I have gotten some sort of like wide-eyed looks. Or people will say, well, if I pay you this money, like what's going to happen if it doesn't work? And I'm almost like, well, that's every time I sit down to write something, it may not work. Like that's part of what this is. Like, it's not a track. It's not like a track that you would go to business school. You do this, do that, and this. You're not a lawyer. You do this, that, and this, and that. It's just completely unique to you. And
how there's no guarantee of anything.
No guarantee of anything. And so people don't like to hear that, but it's really important to say, like, here's what I can do really well. If you want to see how that goes, it's an investment. You won't regret it, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be rich and famous. I mean, I think if someone comes to me and is like, my whole motivation to write is to become rich and famous, I'm like, I'm not the right person for you, because anyone who says that to a person is lying. Like, there's no way, like, how do I write a bestseller? There's no way to know what that looks like unless you are like Tom Clancy, because he has a formula and a name and a brand. But that's not why I started writing. So it's not a good fit. Or I'm just doing this because I want, you know, because I have nothing else to do, which has also happened. Or because I think I'm really interesting. It's like, no. And also it's...
No, actually, you're not that interesting.
No. It's like, writing is not a route to being rich and famous, except for like 0.0002% of people. And a lot of that is just luck. It's not about how good the book is. It's not about how nice the person is. It's just about how it landed in the world at the time that it landed and what happened. That's it. So... to say that you can guarantee that to somebody is a lie. It's just like snake oil. No.
I agree. And I also know we spent a little time talking about who your ideal client is. Mm-hmm. Like, who is the person you are uniquely qualified to work with and the person you most want to work with? Mm-hmm. Because what you do is a very valuable service. It's very labor intensive. There's plenty of other things you could be doing with mm-hmm. that time, energy, and talent. So mm-hmm. if you're going to devote those considerable resources and gifts to this person's work, mm-hmm. we got you really, really clear on the criteria. Mm-hmm. I remember there were a couple of times where you were thinking, well, I really want to tell important stories, mm-hmm. even if the people who have those stories to be told can't afford my services. And I think we identified that you could either create a scholarship mm-hmm. or some sort of a foundation
yeah.
where you can retain, because you're a very generous person. And I think generosity can be used against us in business.
Yes.
By people who, you know, I know that face when you get to the point in the sales conversation where you state your price and they look kind of shocked. Now, maybe they are shocked. And if they actually are, it could be because they haven't done their homework. They do not know who they're talking to.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Or they have grossly unrealistic mm-hmm. expectations about what this whole situation is about. But I think it can also, in some cases, be a tactic that some people, unfortunately, mostly men, use to cause us to doubt ourselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because anytime a woman asks for what she wants, needs, prefers, and gets kind of that shocked or kind of balking response, most women will immediately go to self-doubt, self-questioning, and oftentimes in a situation that involves business, will say, but maybe we could work something out. I came from the therapy profession, and there's something in the therapy profession called the sliding fee scale. Now, if you are working in a community mental health agency, there's means testing to determine there are people who need therapy and can't afford it, and they should be able to get it. Mm-hmm. But if you are in a private practice, you're a business owner.
Yes.
And you have to pay your rent and keep the lights on and your marketing and, you know, all of that. So when you decide to say, I offer a sliding scale, you're basically taking a pay cut. But what you're also doing is you're not being fair to your other clients who are paying more.
Yeah, exactly.
I much prefer the model where you chart, you get really clear about who your client is. Mm-hmm. You get really clear about your worth. You offer your work to people who want what you offer at the price that you offer it, who value it at that level and have those resources. But then doing that consistently and not undercutting yourself or dropping your fees or negotiating or letting a client convince you that that's too much and you should do it for less for them because their story is just so special. It means you can actually afford to offer deserving writers an opportunity to work with you for considerably less or free because you've built that into your business model.
That's really important. And that's one thing that I'm doing with my, in my partnership with my friend is that we, first of all, we got an assistant. I know. And she's magic. Like, I'm not even sure how we even did anything before her because she's like, I've created this funnel system for your newsletter and it's all branded with these colors. Do you like these colors? We're like, we love these colors. And she's like, I have the MailChimp and here's this and I'm going to do this. And I think this email will go out 2 weeks after this email. And then this, it's just like, and she's super artistic. She's a writer. She's a redhead. And she's, we just,
we're, I love fucking redheads
with how amazing that everything looks. Right. And she's, I mean, there's no way we could have ever gotten to that point without her. And so that's,
dude, I so hate to be a know-it-all, but I'm going to be a know-it-all.
Told you so.
Say it.
You're right. But, you know, I mean, it was, and it's so funny because it's like, it also, what I found about the assistant thing is that it makes me feel more professional. Like when we have these business meetings, I'm like, we all know each other. She was a grad student in the program. We never were her teachers, but we know of her. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but she's like, okay, here are the things I want to do. Like, and she actually came to us and was like, I'd like a different title. And we were like, great.
This is your brand new assistant, right?
It's like, she's like, it was so sweet. She's like, I think instead of intern, because we said intern because we were like, we were embarrassed about how much we were paying and we want, but we also said, as we grow, this position will grow, your money will grow, there will be perks. And that's absolutely true. And she's like, she wanted a different title. And we were like, that's great. Still, this is the hourly pay. It will go up. There's going to be like, we cannot survive without her. And she knows it. But like now she feels better about her role. And that was really,
I'm so glad you finally did this.
I know. It's just like, and I was also just, of course, like, good for her. Like, she's asking for these things that she deserves. And we were like, great. That sounds totally fine. What title feels good to you? This is still the only thing we can pay right now. But what title do you want? She told us.
How old is she?
Gosh, 30. She's a millennial.
You know, this is a beautiful thing because we can attract people into our lives to help us and they can teach us things too, because each generation of women has the opportunity to benefit from the previous generations of women, teaching them, leading them, guiding them, mentoring them, continuing to crack the glass ceiling. And so she was able to say, I'm not comfortable with this title. And you're like, did Diane send you?
I know. No, she's amazing. It's also because we're doing retreat work, like our first retreat's in Idaho in September, and we have to have someone there who's organized. And that's not me or Gina. Like we're good at what we do, but we're not good at the back end. And like, she's also a lovely person to have around. Like she's someone, like if we had an office someday, if we were all working in an office, she'd be an amazing colleague. Like there's that too. Like we have to have someone who could really,
she can grow with your business.
Yeah. And who's also interested in literature. She's like, likes people. She's really personable. And to have that, oh my gosh, it's like a whole Heather fest over here, but like to have that person with you on a trip, it's just really important. It's like having,
you're going to take her to Idaho.
Yeah. Oh, we're all going to Idaho. Yeah. And then maybe Italy next year. We don't know. Italy, maybe Wales. We're still trying to figure it out. And also, of course, COVID kind of put a big old halt on all of that.
You can say that again.
We do it in September. It's a smaller one than we anticipated, but it's still going to happen.
You know what I love so much about this, Emily, is that so many women with ADHD who become entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. are burdened. And this, again, it's feminine conditioning. Mm-hmm. We just keep thinking we need to be good at everything. We need to do all the things. We need to do them all well. So if we're not yet at a point where we're doing them all well, we just need to double down and just work harder. The reality is, if you are going to be successful, you have to know what you're good at. Spend as much of your time as you possibly can doing that and get help with everything else. And you are recognizing, hey, I'm not good at the organizing stuff. I'm not good at the detail stuff. I'm not good at the paperwork stuff. I know what I'm good at. This is my zone of genius. And now I'm surrounding myself. Even Gina, your partner, like when you doubt yourself sometimes because being strong about your boundaries, it comes right up against your beautiful personal traits of idealism, empathy, fairness, generosity. I mean, one of the first things we did together was identifying your core values. And when you have values and personality traits mm-hmm. of being generous and giving and collaborative and all of that, and sometimes you have to say no and set limits and boundaries, that's challenging for you. I'm so grateful that your partner is someone who's much more cut and dry, much more, you know, because you can always say, no, I'm still going to do it. I'm still going to step over this boundary that I have chosen and make an exception because it's your freaking business.
Yeah.
And you can. That's the beautiful thing about being an entrepreneur. But you have these boundaries and guidelines and ways of even the way we set up your Calendly, to set up your online scheduler, it does some of the work for you of setting limits and boundaries.
Yes.
So, in fact, I think that was one of the first things that really made a magical difference in your life is because, you know, you were like, everybody had access to you.
No more sort of like texting or like, I put the kibosh on that, hopefully forever. But, you know, one of the things, that funny things that Gina said to me the other day, she's like, I'm from the Midwest. I have no trouble asking people for money, as it turns out. She's like, I can't believe how good I am at that. I'm like, me either. Keep it up. it's just funny because both of us grew up, you know, working class, aka poor, in families that were just, you know, never had a lot of money. And there was never like a feeling of abundance. It doesn't mean we had miserable childhoods. It's just that you didn't ask anyone for money because you were trying to make money so you could, you know, eat and keep the
life. You may do with what you had.
And I'm actually really grateful for that. I mean, I grew up working on a farm. That stuff's hard. That work is hard. It's not paid. So basically it's a bunch of kids doing free labor for their elders, which I guess is how it was then. And it's just like, that's what you do because this is the farm and it's
what needs to be done.
And like, so you may not like pigs. I hate pigs, but you're going to go feed the pigs because it's a pig farm. So get in there with the pigs. Nasty little creatures, those.
But I agree with you, Emily. I think that, you know, and I've seen it happen both ways, but generally people who start off in very comfortable circumstances mm-hmm. don't have the grit that you have.
They have no hustle.
They don't have the resiliency. They don't have the perseverance. They have been made so comfortable and their life has been so convenient that when push comes to shove, they're like, I'm out. Mm-hmm. But you didn't have a lot. So you learned to be resourceful. Mm-hmm. You learned to be accommodating. You learned how to literally paint the fucking pig. You learned how to make magic out of sawdust.
Yeah.
And now you can really appreciate and enjoy the abundance and prosperity that you're creating without being dependent on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
that makes it so much more enjoyable and satisfying, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. I mean, and I feel like too, one of the things that, I mean, I have a client, former client from in the way back, whose book came out this week, actually. Awesome. And she had sent it to me, oh gosh, 3 or 4 years ago. And it was a mess. And she's like, I remember you said it was a mess, but you could work with it. And like, you know, it came out with a big press, Norton. It's gotten a lot of reviews. She's going on a big virtual tour. And I was just like, so excited when I got my copy of that book. Like, and people are always like, oh, you know, writers are jealous. And I definitely have my moments of that. Like, who doesn't?
But, yeah.
I mean, I literally, like, when one of my students got accepted into a PhD program, another one just is publishing his first book, and I got him a gig teaching where I teach sometimes, it makes me so stinking happy to see that they are successful. And it's not because I think I did that. It's just because it's like now they're starting to have their own life. They have really good stories. They're good people. And it's like building out the community. You know, and a lot of the students I work with are similar in background to me, or even, you know, really having a hard, like supporting parents, like coming from nothing. And they work so hard, and those are my favorites. And when they succeed, I'm even more excited. Like the ones that are sort of like, are going to be fine anyway, I'm excited too, but not as excited for the ones that just like, you know, come straight out of like you said, sawdust and are like spinning glitter in their books. It's exciting.
Well, they're the ones that everyone has set low expectations for.
That's it.
And maybe they doubt themselves, mm-hmm. but they have to try anyway. And to be a part of that is a beautiful thing. Those were always the people when I was an employee, manager, administrator, I always wanted to hire the people who weren't the perfect fit for the position, mm-hmm. who maybe didn't have 100% of the qualifications, who had some limitations and maybe some skeletons in their closet, but they were the ones who wanted it so bad.
Hustle.
Who said they would work so hard and said, look, I know you could hire plenty of other people for this job and maybe I'm not the ideal one, but I promise you, if you give me a chance, you'll never regret it. Mm-hmm. I always bet on them.
Yeah.
Because people that are hungry and hardworking and can take feedback mm-hmm. will blow right past the ones that think too highly of themselves and don't have the grit to do the frickin' work. Writing a book, I don't have to tell you, not an easy thing. Mm-hmm. And I love how devoted you are to finding the people with the really important stories mm-hmm. and digging deep with them to make them happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And being supportive. And I think, you know, I think there's a difference too. Like there's my business and then I have my students and my sort of professor job. And that's where I get to be, that's where I get to sort of like, if someone's having a hard time, I can say like, well, let me help you do that because it's part of my job. Or I had a student who got evicted from her apartment and we started a GoFundMe for her, which I would not do for a client, but I would want to. So she, you know, and she didn't have a winter coat. She was living in New York and we could just send her a coat. This is ridiculous. Like, you know, it's like, there are a lot of people, I mean, being poor is expensive.
Yes.
You get evicted, you have a bad car, you go to a bad mechanic, like, and I think that
can't afford to get your teeth fixed.
Yeah, yeah. That sort of like being a mentor, like as a professor, I had a lot of models in my own life where we became friends and sort of allies and colleagues. So then I get to have my business where the boundaries are different. And that feels really good.
I love that. I love that so much. So what's next for you while we're wrapping up? What is the very next thing that people can be looking for if they want to know more about Emily Ratblack?
Cool. Well, you can go to my website, which is emilyratblack.com, or you can go to circeconsulting.net, which is the business I have with my girlfriend, Gina. I have a book coming out in June called Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg, which is about Frida Kahlo and my left leg.
I can't wait to read that one.
And then I'm working on a couple of projects, but this year, I think that Gina and I are just going to concentrate on building our business and doing our retreats. So that's where they can find me.
That's fabulous. Fabulous, fabulous. I can't wait for the book. I will link to all of your juicy goodness in the show notes. Thank you for being here and for sharing your client success story with everybody. You are delightful. I adore you and you are an inspiration.
Thank you, Diane. You're the best. Best coach. Everyone hire Diane. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Diane. Can I be honest with you? At the beginning of each new year, I always told myself, this is the year I'm going to get my habits dialed in. This is the year I'm going to be crystal clear about my goals and I'm going to crush them. This is the year I'm going to get my shit together on every level and I'm going to do it all by myself. Been there, done that, got a whole stack of t-shirts. But you know, it wasn't until I started working with my own coach that I realized what a difference it makes to have guidance, support, and accountability from someone who's not only like-minded, but like-brained. Yeah, I'm talking about another driven woman, entrepreneur, who also has ADHD, and has got it going on. I have two openings in my signature one-on-one 12-week coaching program, and one of them might have your name on it. There's a link to a free consult with me in the show notes if you think this might be the year that you really get serious and go all in on an ADHD-friendly business and life. While you're thinking about that, have a listen to what one of my clients' success stories has to say about the difference it made to work with me.
I adopted this phrase of, this is what we do here, instead of trying to make it, like for the longest time, I was trying to make it fit everybody's need, where you were attracted.
Yes.
So that was, I think, the struggle bus. And I don't think I was aware of that. I was, just because I love people. And when you have potential, I can help you get there. So I think I was allowing too much wiggle. And that's what you helped me through mostly in my memory of like figuring out that it's okay to say, no, this is what we do here. This is that stance. And that's how Beyond Common, you know, 12 Essentials for Success in Life, it finally was completed. It was just like this pieces and parts of things that we had done that worked to make us successful. But it was like through that figuring out how to connect everything. And definitely your influence helped me so much. Like it was like, you know, you're an angel.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.